Welcome to the second episode of Let's Chat with a Dyslexic. I'm a dyslexic, and I'm having a chat with my best mate Adam about it. We talk honestly, so cover adult themes and use strong language. Last week we covered school life, and this week we're going to chat about my further and higher education, scouting, and general difficulties. This week's episode is dedicated to George, a fantastic mentor and friend. He showed me respect and changed my life.
So basically we had school and we move on to college, which I know for you was a lot easier. Probably not an awful lot to talk about in college, but was there anything key, you know, in terms of your dyslexia and problems and successes?
Well, it was a weird stage of my life because you come out of this intense, awful situation of school, this really clumped up boil of piss and vinegar that's really just awful place, and you're going into this completely different world. So I had a lot of like hang-ups from coming out of school that were quite quickly dissipated when I got to college. Like, I just made friends straight away like that with people. There was no like having I was going to somewhere where I knew nobody else, so I made sure I went to a college that was away from our local area. I went to, we have a college that I could have went to in the sort of town we live, but I went to the city. That sounds a bit like I'm going to some big place, but it's about a half an hour bus ride away.
10 miles away, it's not far.
But it was a big thing because I was a little spazzy kid going to this big place. Yeah, straight away things just fell into place.
So that contrasts a little with school then. So in school where you struggle to make friends in certain social aspects, to then college where you didn't seemingly have a problem. Now, do you think that was because you weren't going into extra classes and you were actually integrating? Or do you think that was just a change of personality at that time?
I think what had happened was I had changed completely from that person that had come into year 7 up to coming out of year 11. Because I did have lots of friends I came out of there with friends, with my lifelong best friend, hetero life partner almost sort of thing. I'd come out with a girlfriend. I'd been in a relationship for about 6 months by that point. So I was coming out a completely different human being. All these stuff I had to fight for, it wasn't easy. But I'd got there. I was socialising with lots of people by then, of you and other people. I was going into a situation where people didn't know me past. They only seen who I was that day when I arrived. You were there. And I was by this time, I was interesting in a different way. I'd gone full punk. I'd rebelled. I had long red hair. I looked an absolute state. I was probably dressed really scruffy, but in like a, I don't want to say cool, because I've looked at pictures of me and there's no way any of them you could describe as cool, but I was interesting. Also, it might have helped I was doing IT and it was full of more
nerdy people.
That way I wasn't the most nerdy one. So I went into that environment. Don't get me wrong, dyslexia was still a problem in college. Things like, I wrote an assignment and the lecturer had a quiet word with us about it and said, I think you need some help. We've got these things. The content is good. So giving that yin and yang of, look, you've got these problems. You know you've got these problems would gone in there. We think you need some extra help. But it was taught to me as, again, as somebody speaking to another human being. And then I went and sort of seen their special needs. A wonderful lady called Kay, I can't remember her last name. And she sat down and we did the one-to-one, and it was something that I knew that I had to put that little bit extra effort in. But it wasn't humiliating. It wasn't bad. You had a coffee, you made the situation okay, you chatted about things, how's life? And it was just you've got these little set of skills you can't do. We'll help you out. But at that point, I was so fed of the system, they were prepared to give me lots of help. And I was like, no, I want the bare minimum because I've done all this.
Yeah, so instead of like at school where the kind of looking down on you nearly in terms of, you know, why don't you know this, and trying to step you through treating you as probably a less intelligent person than what you are, just somewhere where at college where they're treating you like an equal and doing what would essentially be teamwork. If it was in a workplace, that'd be considered teamwork.
Like, what it was I wasn't a burden anymore. The help was being offered to us in a way of, this is what we can offer you. Where at school, they kept wanting me to ask for help, but they sort of didn't tell you need to ask for it, but you had to ask for it. Now, it's very, very hard to go up to somebody and say, excuse me, I need some help here.
Especially if you don't know you need to ask for help.
Yeah, it's such a really weird thing where you either have somebody sitting next to you and it would just be a case of like somebody going and just saying, are you okay? That 2 seconds of somebody that was getting, quite frankly, paid by money that was getting brought in by my disorder, as Google put it, just seemed, you know, we're helping people that were probably more needy of help, but then that meant that they didn't come and check to make sure you could.
It's an interesting differences in the way that people were prepared to give you that extra time and that extra help and not just be throwing time at you and just going, oh yeah, you've got an extra 10 minutes to get it done. It's kind of that actual attention.
Like, going sort of back to the school stuff, I've got lots of opinions on it. And it's, we need to fundamentally change how we teach people. It's across the board of we need to work out how people need to be educated and educate people properly and give them things to do that they're passionate about.
Like, I always remember doing those tests of, are you a reader, a doer, or a copier, or whatever it was, where it finds out how you remember things? And I always remember doing them at school, and then the school doing absolutely naff all with that kind of knowledge. And you're like, so you're all trying to figure out how to tailor your education, and you still don't do the bare minimum of knowing how different people learn.
But it all comes down to just inspiring people, and I think that's the big thing is, once you inspire somebody, people want to learn, so they then try, and you need to then give them the skills. So instead of me having to read a book about bloody John going to the park, when I was proper into music, this should have been going through a basic biography of music, because that's what I was into. I was not a musician, I wasn't somebody that was going to want to sing and do that. But if they'd put the time in and said, look, we'd like to help you read a book. A book on Alice Cooper, or I was very much into punks, or John Lydon, or something like that.
Or even being able to just read lyrics.
Yeah. And just being like, right, what we're going to do is we're going to tailor this time for the stuff you can't do and make it good. So that you're going to come after school for an hour and you're going to learn about something that you are interested in. But forgetting about the bits that you can't do. And that's the big thing of any message of anybody that's dyslexic, I would say, is ignore the reading and writing and it will come. How much better am I now when I send things, if I think about it? I can almost get things where I send you something to proofread and I get, this is fine back.
Yeah, like if you spend your time doing it, then yeah, like if you type really quickly.
Like, these show notes are dog shit and they're doing me head in because I can now, but there'd have been a point where I could have seen the squiggly line and I wouldn't have understood why it was wrong. I could have the squiggly lines off and I can see some of them are because the brain was going quicker than the typing or the typing was going quicker. But that has become along because of just constantly just doing silly things, writing silly little sketches that make you laugh and you putting up with the bad spelling and going, oh, right, yeah, yeah, I understand that. And I think one of the things, I've got people like you and me dad can read dyslexic now. You can read my language fairly well.
Yeah.
You'll still pick on things and go, actually, I don't understand that at all.
Yeah.
But I can be quite confident that you'll get 90% of what I write you. That then gives me a tool.
It's worse when you're drunk. Your drunk texts, it's like I've had a stroke.
Yeah, I should really just stop texting you drunk, because they're never anything important.
So if it's enthusiasm and being engaged, and you went through college, and obviously you were doing a subject you had at least some engagement in, some
yeah,
let's not necessarily say a passion, but you enjoyed the subjects because you actually excelled at it, you did really well, you went to university. Was the progression through college to university relatively seamless, or did you then hit the same old problems again at the university, or did you meet new problems?
I had a great, you know, I've got the certain fears, and we might touch on more of them, but university terrified us, so I didn't go to proper university. I went to a college to do me both my foundation degree and then even my degree. I did the foundation degree at the same college I did the BTEC in. So that was quite like just seamlessly moving across. The support was in place and things like that. I then took a gap year to find myself. Is that the right word?
That's or such trying a hippie to get a job. Phrase.
Well, it's better than saying lazing about for 2 years, one as a labouring for a letter. It might have been a year.
You're not lazing about if you're doing labouring and got a job.
Yeah.
It's not really a gap year, is it?
You know. But I basically then decided that I had to get the top up, and I went to Newcastle College. And it was, to be honest, it was a very similar experience. I went in, started making friends. First assignment came back. And they were like, there's a problem here. So by that time, like what I should say is in the foundation, when I did the foundation degree at New College, they put in place, could get some money from the government for some assistive technologies. And the one that sort of worked was speech recognition. That worked a very loose term. If I need to do a big piece of writing and I don't want to rely on anybody else and I've got lots and lots of time, I can do a report that looks reasonable.
Yeah.
With speech recognition software. So for an assignment, it's probably what the process would be. I would write it in Phil English or dyslexic English. I would then speech recognition it. I would then have to audio it back to myself for a screen reader to read it to us. I can read a book and things like that. I can read, but it's very hard to read my own faults.
Yeah.
You'd then have to get somebody else to check it out. Luckily, my girlfriend at the time was good at that sort of thing. Read through it. Then you would have to submit it. So all them iterations just to get it in. And even then, it would still have spelling problems, grammar problems, because even when somebody spell checks it, they still have massive problems because of the way people read and because of the way the dyslexic might just muddle up some words or whatever. And because people read, you guess half the words in a sense.
On a skim read. So I know from reading your stuff, if you skim read it, you can still miss a good 5-10% of
it. And that's a massive burden for me, because what I've got to do is have these people, if it's important, it goes to one of my sort of like trusted people, because it's a very really personal thing, putting something that's not spell checked out there. It's almost very naked. And sometimes you might be writing stuff that you only want one person to see, but somebody else has got to see it to make sure that other person...
Like, it's an interesting stance as well, because for like your university work, you're getting other people to proofread your work, which then, if you didn't have the support mechanism you had, could have opened you up to all sorts of other problems, like, you know, collusion and theft.
I would then have to rely on probably more the colleges to do it. That's fine, they do have these things in place, but it's not as easy, it's not as fun, I've written this, can we do this tonight while having a beer? Or me send it over to you and you do it at some point at your leisure and it'd be a matey thing. But that's a massive, that's something that you do for me very, very regularly and still very, very regularly, that you take that time out of your life to spell check something for me. You get nothing out of it. I barely say thank you quite often because it's just a given that it's going to happen now when it shouldn't be. But also you'd probably be pissed off if every time I made a big song and dance of how much I do feel how good it is that I've got people in my life that's not... My dad's fantastic at it, and you're fantastic at it, where I can just put some shite out and you will order it for no thanks at all. And that is a massive, massive, one, a burden for me, because I don't like having to do it. I do feel bad having to do it. It's also a massive joy that I've got a friend that will do that, and that sort of commitment that you make to me, and that time is worth probably one of the biggest things you give to me. And it's massive. And but as again, these people have been key in my journey, and people have cemented me to be the person I am today. If we're going to qualify that today I am a success, I am a a functioning adult, that it could be a complete different discussion. But for this, we will say that today I am an adult. I wouldn't be an adult, or I might not necessarily be the adult I am today that I am very proud of without that support.
Yeah. I mean, I think as I know I am, and the same with I know your parents are actually massively proud of where you've got to, because even the little amount of help that you do sometimes get, there's a lot of it you didn't need. You definitely put a lot of thought into when you ask for help and when you don't. And although, you know, usually it's only words, there's a lot of work that you do where you don't need help, and you could get a lot of places without it.
Well, I think that's one of the things that, again, we'll come on to another show later on in this discussion, is that I've managed to fit into work and it not be a massive problem. We're going to get onto more of the problems that it is, but it's not been what I believed it was going to be because of a lot of... It's weird because, yes, I've had some of the stuff at school must have helped. The stuff at college really helped. But the things that have helped, a lot of it's been outside the stuff. One of them being you, one of them being scouting.
So I know you're outside of school. I know you're through scouting and everything, and you've brought it up a couple of times. How has that changed you? How has that been the positivity that you talk about? Because to an outsider, a scouting is just standing there in a bit of uniform and putting a tent up and saying dib dib, you know, or, you know, anything else similar. So
I know scout troops where the story would have been very different and I wouldn't have fit in. Well, I saw when I was 10, so this story is parallel to what's going on in school. The story of all this misery and not necessarily having that many friends and things like that. And it starts off that scouting, I think my brother was a scout. Dad dropped him off and I was just like tagging along, you know, as you do as a little snotty kid, and it was Christmas party. I can remember the first day and I just sort of joined in with them. And in my mind, I joined in this first day just as you might, like a little kid being along with them. And then at the end, it's like, oh, you're going to join? Well, I'm an older. Oh, yeah, you can join. So quite quickly, joined in. And the thing about scouting was I didn't very rarely had to do the bits that I can't do or I'm not very good at. Quite quickly, the image that everybody else there would get would be different. They knew there was a problem, you know, it's a mile off at that age. But what I was doing was a lot of creativity things, lots of challenges and things like that. And them things I was really good at. Comedy and things like that. And again, these were people, most of them weren't from my school. If at that point, if I was stupid, these people were intelligent people. That we know that from the discussions they were having. You know, they weren't having the discussions that I could have at the time that was very, like, probably babyish or a lot lower. These were did things that didn't even interest me, like paint little bits of Warhammer that's never going to interest me. They were having these discussions and I was equal with them and they were more intelligent. Then this really, like, cub came up that was a little shite. A friendship started to be born there. Getting the badges. I was also very quickly getting up the ranks of being a seconder and then a patrol leader and things like that. So that whole thing was different and give you worth. It encouraged me to be my best and ignore the rest. And we had a fantastic scout leader. So first time in my life that there was an adult that wasn't a family member that was treating me as an equal, as a human. Very good scout leader, George. That just the right amount of what I'd call naughtiness, that sounds a bit wrong, but I mean like...
The odd shits and buggers and you know, but with discipline.
Yes, with discipline and stuff like that. So you were getting this complete different world. It's like, yeah, there's something here. There's something that I can attach to. It was a jack of all trades things. So things that I wasn't good at, it didn't matter. And because I was good at other things, when I wasn't good at things, I could laugh at myself and people could laugh at me because we were laughing together. So if I wrote something stupid... And also, you people understood the problems, so you could put crutches in places. And as a dyslexic, that's what you do. You put things in place to get round to be a normal human being. You knew that you were going to get other people to write things down. very rarely did we write things. Now, I don't know if that was just the scouting we did or if the scout leaders were... Now, it would have helped that one of the scout leaders was my dad, the other was George, that we didn't write that much. And when we did, you didn't have to stand up and sort of get it marked. You might talk about it. That's fine, I can talk about what I've wrote. I can't read it out. I can't stand up and go, how you put up a tent is... But instead, oh, what have you said? What do you think about putting up a tent? I'd be like, all right, well, da-da-da-da-da. So this developed like a character that I couldn't develop at school of just respecting myself. That then meant, with that respect, came the anger that then got us on. And George is still a friend to this day.
Yeah.
The things that he did and where he put me and the warmth. They showed you how to be a person and how to interact with people because they showed you in the correct way.
I mean, I think, yeah, I know that the likes of George and your dad, everybody like mini adults. They didn't sit there and treat you like snotty children like school did. And you know, as you say, you went up ranks to second and patrol leader, which gives you that little bit of, I don't know, responsibility.
Like if you give a list of my talents,
kind of trust,
I'm a bossy
in somebody,
fucker.
You know, they're trusting you.
I can come up with
to
creative
have that responsibility.
Ideas. You know, all them things really worked in that environment. You know?
Yeah.
There was lots of, you know, the dyslexia still, you know, there's not a day goes by, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't I didn't think about it, though. It did come into play quite regularly, especially when you're camping and things like that, and you've got to, you know, be in your own little world, and the negative effects that I honestly see that really affect me is probably less, well, they are to do with the reading and writing, but it's not the straightforward reading and writing. It's the organisational skills, it's the clumsiness, it's the losing fucking everything. That is honestly the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, so why don't we go into some of the ancillary side things that, you know, people might not know about dyslexia. So, you know, yeah, sure, you can't read and write very well in terms of getting it out of your brain, because obviously you can read and write in your brain. You know how your brain works. You can speak very well. You can be very eloquent with your words. But getting it out on paper, getting it to other people in a non-verbal way is a challenge.
So I think it's a very complex picture. Very complex indeed. First of all, I think the biggest thing is shame. The shame you feel at lots of different times. Throughout school, I felt shameful and stuff like that. And even today, there's so many times where you just feel shameful, annoyed, pent up. One of the things is... But I'm going to mention, I've never, like, self-harmed. I've never had any of them thoughts. I felt bad. I think if certain things weren't in place, then I would. There's a quote I got off the internet that I think is very important to this. People with learning difficulties is 46% higher odds of attempting suicide. Because of all the great things that I had in place, things like scouting, things like the friendships I had, that wasn't something that I considered. But I do think if them weren't in place... That is something that could have been in the story, and I might not have been here telling you this story today, that I think is important. And this is lots and lots of things that build up to make you frustrated, ashamed. But yeah, even today there's been things that have made me feel bad about myself that has a good chance of what I know about dyslexia is linked. So one is the losing of stuff. And that is probably the biggest thing that will send me into what I would call a dyslexia depression, where I feel stupid, and it is especially fucking keys, because I'll be about to go out the house and I'll lose keys. And this is where my mother is a saint, because it goes, where's your keys? I don't know. And they could be anywhere. And I mean anywhere. They could be in the fridge. They could be anywhere. It's if I'm out of routine. If I come in the house, I have somewhere where I put my keys. They should be there. However, I come in with a big box with something I'm excited about. The routine is thingy. Damn, keys could be then anywhere. I come in the house and I'm angry. The keys could be anywhere. Excited. Just anything. And then you just feel useless. Absolutely useless. Because you can't do something, you can't go anywhere. So you're now looking for something that you don't know where it is, maybe while crying, while very, very angry, and then you find them, normally in a stupid place, that then has two results. You either stay angry, you're even more angry, or you start laughing at yourself. Then you go to the pub with your mates and you have to act normal. Because you don't want them to know what you've just gone through, because when you go to the pub and say you're okay, you don't want to hear a story about how I've just thought I'm the most useless person in the world. So it's all about hiding all this, all the time. It's hiding, hiding, hiding. And trying to get round, trying not to put a chink in that armour. One of my other big bugbears, as people that know me from the podcast, drink a lot of beer, go to a lot of pubs, craft beer names. They're fucking long and complicated. I would like that beer. So if I go to a place, it's fantastic if it's got numbers. That's easy. I want a pint of number 3. Nobody knows that I can't quite read the board. So if I've had a drink, dyslexia get worse. And that's another thing. My dyslexia is really bad if I'm drunk, tired, excited. The emotions really change it. It's not just a, this is where you are today, tomorrow I could be completely different. Some days I have very dyslexic days, and I've got to know, that's a bit of a side thing. But yeah, I think in the last year, the biggest shame I've had, where I've really, really, really felt bad, was when I read a name wrong in a bar, and the bar person just, the tone they said it back to us was just like, well, it's this, you know, like that tone. And I felt absolutely awful because that person just thought I was a stupid idiot. And I'll come back to have a drink, feeling like that. And you're now in this like double thing. You've come back from the bar. You don't want to say to all your mates, actually, now I really feel awful and I'd like to go home now because I feel stupid and embarrassed. You've just got to laugh on with them and try and convince them that we're going to go to a different pub. And that happened, like, it's happened quite a few times, and it is... Going up to the bar for me is a daunting thing. How do I get round it? Well, I become lazy.
Yeah.
I give you the card. I say, I'm just going to the toilet. Will you get us a thing? You'll have all seen it and you all think I'm a lazy shite.
You send me up.
And it's not. It's because I do not want to go to the bar and have to read out them a list. Or people give you a list. You want to buy in a round. You've got to remember the list. You write it down. You go to the bar. You read it out badly. Everybody wants different words. I can't say the words. So I've then got to either say, will you come up and help us? That if you're in a big group of people, it's quite embarrassing. I could maybe have a word with you. But if I go to you, will you just help us up at the bar? Everybody will think we're going to go neck on in the back. So you've then got to come up with these strategies. You've got to come up with these facades to then get round everything. So you should hopefully see a complete different me. So what should be happening is, it's like the swan swimming. On the front, I should be all graceful and cracking jokes and happy and just normal. But on the inside, the legs are scrambling all over the place just to keep us afloat. And it's fucking tiring at times.
Yeah, like, I just thought you were a lazy shite when you went to the toilet and gave me your card. Oh, he just wanted me to pay.
But there's reasons between a lot of little quirks I have. Are there? And I don't think about them. You only think about them when you start to do stuff like this. Of all the little, what you call crutches, Zach, and workaround. The amount of times you look on your phone. How ignorant I must look because I'm on my phone. But it's going to try and work out what a bloody word is on a menu or something. Trying to spell it a million times into fucking Google. And Google's fantastic because I can write a sentence and Google knows what I mean 99% of the time. And if not, I can be really embarrassing and go up to my phone and say the word in a sentence and it'll probably get it.
I think Google's probably one of the best tools. Like even for just somebody who poorly spells some words, like I can put some in and I know I can be like 4 letters wrong and it still gets it right. So for the likes of you, it must be an absolute amazing tool.
You're just trying to seem normal all the time and not mention it. And I don't know how much I mention it, because I do seem to mention it a lot, but then I don't think I mention it that much. Because I've tried to be open about it, because I want people to know about it. My main thing is I want people to recognise problems in their children that have genuinely got it. I don't think they're diagnosing every child, but I still think there's plenty of children that go up and that don't get the help And I would like people to talk to us so they can try and go, yeah, you can. Your narrative as a dyslexic is quite simple. You get told it. You then get told all these people are dyslexic. Richard Branson, Einstein. So now you've got this problem of, oh, I'm this spazzy kid. I'm meant to be as good as them. So it has a double-edged sword. Sometimes it's nice. It's like, oh, yes, this thing that somebody said I've got doesn't mean I am stupid. But it also puts a massive amount of pressure on you at a point where they don't tell you the other end of the spectrum. Like a study was done in Chelmsford Prison where 53% of the prisoners had dyslexia compared to 10% of the population that have dyslexia.
Which is an interesting statistic.
That says that for everybody that's getting the help and being Richard Branson, there's a lot more people being failed. I think there's people in jail today because they didn't get the help with their dyslexia or their different isms. Because I don't care what it is. What should happen is, it doesn't matter what, you know, labelling doesn't always help. What it is about giving these people the support.
Quite likely. I think there's a lot of people in that situation that is because society has let them down in some way.
I think dyslexia is a class system. For a working class person, it's jail. For a middle class person, it's high office and responsibility.
Moving people out of the situation where they need to use the skills that are poor at.
Yeah.
Because if you can't read, you can't fill in a job application form.
Yeah.
You can't read. If you can go into something, and obviously job interviews, job application forms is a complete other bit of a discussion. But if you can't go into something and say, can you just bear with certain things of us and have a chat with us and just see if you can get round these, you just see that first.
Yeah.
That first initial. And that is a massive thing of people's initial opinions of people are based not on the content of the words or anything else. It's on the spelling of the words.
This week's episode was dedicated to George, a fantastic mentor and friend. He showed me respect and changed my life. You've been listening to Let's Chat with a Dyslexic, a chat between Phil and Adam, and then edited by Phil. It was a Formal Shark production.